listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. The program is Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor. And before we dive in, I'll remind you that Praxis receives support from the Smith Barbieri Progressive Fund, a charitable foundation. Information at smith-barbieri.com. And as I said, I'm your host. You're listening to Praxis. And today I have a show lined up with two folks who are both delegates and otherwise involved at the Democratic National Convention this last week. You might have heard about it. It did happen. And I'm going to spend the first half of the hour with Jessa Lewis. She was acting as communications coordinator and director for the Washington State delegation to the convention in Philadelphia. And then in the second half of the hour, I'm going to bring on Sandy Williams, who you know from the show and from all her great work in Spokane. She's the editor of the Black Lens News and was a Bernie Sanders delegate there. So I'm going to talk to both of them. Really looking forward to it. Jessa, can you hear me out there?
Yes, I can.
Right on. You're on the air. Do you want to start by just giving a little introduction of who you are and what your involvement was in last week's convention?
Yes, yeah, so I moved from Spokane to Seattle just this year, and upon moving here, was elected to represent the 7th Congressional District as a pledged Bernie Sanders delegate, and we all had somewhat sorted upon skill sets, and I offered to help with kind of the communications and messaging portion of how we interacted with the media and everybody else that was there. And it was quite the exercise working with a very powerful team of leaders and individuals and working together in order to try to advance the causes that we're there to represent.
Yeah. So was that, what's your involvement been in the past in either electoral politics or politics in general?
Well, I've been involved in and out of politics ever since 2007. I helped out with several of the city council races there in Spokane. I was a part of the coordinated campaign in Bellingham. I did quite a bit of work also in southwestern Washington in the Vancouver area. So I've always been somewhat involved, but this year it took, with Bernie's campaign, it took on a whole new life, and it definitely took over.
Took over your life?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And so I guess talk me through, we obviously, I think people have been following the Sanders campaign and just that attempt to secure the nomination, obviously did not. And a lot of people were getting involved and getting excited at the national level for the first time in the same mm-hmm. way that happened with, I think, Barack Obama's campaign, but at a much larger scale.
Yeah.
How did that work for you in terms of condensing those messages and kind of getting everyone unified in their communication, particularly as it became a disappointing and upsetting event for so many people?
Well, that was the thing. Was at the end of 2008, after Obama was elected, we were kind of blown to the wind. The amazing grassroots network that had been built, there wasn't really any place to put that energy. Whereas this time, the focus from the beginning was always, yes, the presidential race is one part of it, but that's just the beginning. It's about down-ballot races. It's about getting people involved. It's about building a lasting network and getting people to step up and run for office and support others. And it's definitely more of a bottom-up rather than a top-down transformational message this time. And that is what I'm encouraging everyone who is a Sanders supporter to do, is to look to see exactly what you can do in your community. Is it, you know, working on your school board? Is it running for one of the many municipal offices that we have in Washington? Is it volunteering for a campaign? Whatever it is, engage right where you are, right at home. And those people that are engaging now on the small local level, those are the ones that are going to, you know, from that initial seeding pool, we'll rise the leaders of the next, you know, 4, 8 plus years. And that's a real message of hope, is that it doesn't end here. that we're just getting started.
Yeah. And so what is your, it's been really interesting to follow this nomination process, because I think that the Bernie Sanders campaign illuminated a lot of things about the way that the parties just work in terms of kind of pre-selecting someone who is going to receive the kind of institutional support that comes with being, you know, the Hillary Clinton, in this case, the chosen person, especially I think in the Democratic case. And I was talking with a friend of mine about how that works on the state level and even on the local level with the parties. That's part of what the parties do, is leverage support into certain races. But I feel like Bernie Sanders kind of upset that in a lot of ways and illuminated how that works for people, some people for the first time, who are really surprised by this corruption in the DNC and surprised at the way it works. What's your take on that? I mean, is that an institution that you're going to remain involved with just on a personal level? What was your reaction to the different ways that this played out?
Well, definitely. You know, I mean, as far as on the local level, the party is who shows up. In the state of Washington, we had 75% more people register to be PCOs, which is the lowest level elected office, than any other time in state history. And that was driven by Bernie's campaign. Now, it's the PCO that elects your local officers, and those are the people who then elect who's running the state. So if you think about it, we could... the Bernie-crats, if you want to call them that, could very well be in a position to have massive influence, if not control, over the state during reorg in December and January. And that was the whole message, was to get in, to engage, and to show up. And that is so powerful, because I think people don't realize how much. And that's part of the low voter turnout that we're seeing and everything else, is that people think that their votes don't matter, that their voices don't matter. And this was a full-on encouraging to, you know, to kind of, you know, put your shoulder to the plow and make stuff happen. And that is something that I think that people should take away from this process, is how much influence they actually have.
Yeah. And are you more on, I see two main schools kind of emerging among the hardcore Bernie people who I know, but also among people in the left who aren't involved generally in electoral politics, of kind of assimilate into and take control of parts of the Democratic Party, or there's another conversation kind of catalyzing around Jill Stein, around people who don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, but also in general around a third left party. Do you have a take on that, or a feel for kind of where people are at, maybe our Washington delegates specifically who were Bernie delegates, or people in general?
I would definitely say that bifurcation we're seeing is good, and that people are going to need to figure out where they fit in the equation. If someone is going to be an absolute purist with what they're wanting to see done, then an outside force, be it third party, be it advocacy groups, is going to be their home. And if someone is more comfortable, you know, making those tough decisions and negotiating around things, then they're going to be able to infiltrate the party from the inside. Both roles are valid. Both roles are acceptable. And both roles are going to be part of how we move this forward. I personally believe that I am best suited for working within the party, because there are definitely good people inside, and some who have just lost touch or haven't had the support to do the things that they're wanting to do. And, you know, and you cannot get upset at somebody for following their heart on this matter. And I definitely have to have respect for everyone in the process, no matter where they fit in, or where they fit in that spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just makes so much sense. A lot of what I think is coming out of this is just a reexamination of our party system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd say that's accurate or not, but I think that would be a good thing in general, too, to have a little more pluralism. You know, I think there's a reason something like, 42% of people identify as independents right now?
Yeah, It's even gone up to 45 from the last thing I saw. And that says something. When you look at how many seats we've lost over the last 8 years, I mean, part of it is due to, you know, gerrymandering and redistricting. But the other part of it is just feeling like it doesn't matter that they show up. Because when voter turnout is high, progressives win. I mean, that's been proven time and time again. And we've lost, you know, 900-some seats, you know, in local legislatures, a dozen governorships, a dozen Senate seats. And when we lose control, then that means that progressive issues get pushed to the side in the party and that the country continues to move center right. And I encourage everyone, get out and vote. I mean, you've got your primary ballot there to do tomorrow. And if you haven't gotten it there, gotten it in, then you have no right to complain about how things are going.
Yeah. And I'll share some information later on once I look it up during the break about if you lost your ballot, ways you can still recover that if you did.
Great. Please do.
There's drop boxes, you know, around town in Spokane, most of the libraries. If you don't have access to a stamp or something like that, there's a lot of ways to make it happen. So, yeah, I appreciate the shout out. I kind of forgot about that date, and that might be an important thing to share today, being the day before that happens. So,
yeah, please do get out the vote. I mean, it is so important. And so far from what I'm seeing, the reports of voter turnout is abysmally low this year. So I hope that's not the case. And your vote means more than ever. Mm-hmm. If that is really what's going on.
Yeah, particularly since, you know, Washington State, with the candidate elections, we have the top two primary. So This is your chance. If you do support someone who is third party or not, you know, one of the major candidates in one of the major parties, this is your chance to support them and get them on the general ballot. So, yeah.
Definitely, and especially with some of those races that are a little bit closer than what we'd like, you know, for a Senate and everything else, we want to make sure that we get Joe in, for example, because that's going to really help swing the balance of power.
Yeah. Can you talk a little more about that, since I can't as the person?
Well,
just last name, at least, or...
Yeah, I hope I don't ruin it just because I haven't been over there for a bit, so I hope it's pronounced Patukas. But being from Spokane, it is definitely important for me to see the increase that we've been seeing as far as progressives getting involved. I mean, everything that's been happening on our city council, and I definitely want to see that continue, because I know everyone kind of writes off the east side as the red part of the state, and I think there's so much progress that's happening over there and conversations about real issues that matter. And any of those seats that we can get that will help sway things back in the balance to where we can talk about, you know, conservation and, you know, actually doing good things for our food system. Those are the sort of things that having representation from that side of the state will help push.
Yeah. And so I guess just backing up to the convention, What there was a lot going on, obviously, you know, these email leaks happen right at the beginning. Sanders obviously conceded, a ton of Sanders delegates walked out, and I haven't followed a lot of the mainstream coverage, but because I had so many people on social media who were there, it seemed redundant. What are your favorite stories, or do you have like a sum up of what went down and what didn't go down?
Oh man, if it seems like I'm having trouble thinking, I'm still in a fog. It is sleep deprivation boot camp over there. Figure it was insanely hot, insanely humid, and many of us were only getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. That week definitely pushed me to my absolute limits, and everyone there as well. So I have so much love for everyone who hung in there, both on the inside and outside of the convention. So figure every time you heard USA or Hillary, that was actually covering up our chant. You know, we had many, you know, Muslim members of our delegation and many people who were veterans, who were concerned about a interventionist policy from a Clinton administration that, you know, so we were shouting no more war, and their response was USA.
Oh, my.
And that was that's why you had so many of those chants, because figure everything was managed We had to fight for our seats, especially that final night, from people they brought in without credentials to be seat fillers so that they wouldn't be embarrassed by another walkout again. And these people were filed four deep in the aisleways, so we could barely get by. So it was a complete safety hazard.
Wow.
We also, the Washington delegation had in the middle of it, the ADA section. And so we had our own, wheelchair bound and other accessibility challenged folks who needed access to seats or to that space. And we had to fight for it. There was no signage. People were just walking through. There was one point where they even kicked some of the wheelchairs out for people in suits to come sit there, and we had to advocate to bring them back. And you had the Alabama state chair, who's a Clinton delegate, just hanging out in the hallway having her shoulders bumped by people coming by because they never made proper accommodation. There were folks in wheelchairs who were stuck outside the perimeter fence and had to go for a mile and a half plus to finally get to an access point because they wouldn't let anybody in. Now, and it's like 98 degrees, 60% humidity, and they're having to go up and over curbs, which are non-accessible. And it's so despicable and heartbreaking. The people who were sent to the hospital, who needed medical attention because there wasn't proper care or allowance for people who had special accessibility needs when they're parading them on stage.
Wow.
And that was one of the media stories that our team actually worked really hard to get out there, especially on day 3 and 4, because it was heartbreaking, and having people have to constantly fight, advocate for themselves, or people who have, non-visible disabilities who needed to sit on the end, being told they had to move, and having to fight for their own needs. Some of these people had PTSD or panic attacks, or other needs to where they knew where they needed to sit, and instead they're being harassed and being told that they had to move. And you would think if we're going to be a party of inclusivity that there would be more sensitivity to those sort of needs and not, an absolute lack of space. From what I understand, because of our pushing, they ended up tearing down part of the stage and making more accessible spaces on the floor. But even then, it's a battle, and that's one of the things we're going to do, going forward, is to work with the party to make sure that never happens again. Because from what I understand, it happens every convention.
Oh.
And people complain, and then the next convention happens and proper allowances aren't made. And when they did so much planning to figure out how to silence us, how to control our messaging, how to cover us up with signs, how to turn the lights off, how to have us where the cameras weren't pointed at us.
Uh-huh. That image of the lights turned off on the whole section was just astounding.
Yep. We had the lights turned off on us. And for how much time and energy they spent on that, I wish they would have spent half of it on taking care of our delegates.
And when you say people were brought in, who were the people who were brought in to fill those seats that had been left empty by people walking out in protest on that first and second day?
Well, there wasn't as many people who were there. That's why there was, those photos where you saw all of the red seats after that walkout.
Yeah.
But by day 4, they did not want it to be an embarrassment. And we would ask them where they came from, and they were, instructed not to tell us. But they're not supposed to be on the floor unless they have credentials. Our credentials are scanned and are checked at multiple points to make sure that we are supposed to be there. And, there's a photo I took of a gentleman wearing a Philadelphia Eagles, a stained Philadelphia Eagles shirt, who is obviously a local. And he wouldn't talk to me, and he was pretty belligerent, and there were some reports of some of these seat fillers trying to pick fights in order to get the seat from people, or they would sit down and be asked, well, do you have credentials? Do you belong with this state? And we couldn't even listen to the speeches because the bulk of the time was spent defending our space. And this one guy I took a photo of was just classic, and he did not. I asked him, do you have any credentials? Are you supposed to be here? And he didn't, and he wouldn't show me. So it was amazing how much of that time, you know, how much of those rules were broken, how much time we had to spend just trying to keep our own seats in order to be there, to be present, to, you know, hear what Hillary and others had to say to us in order to see, you know, are we going to be unified going forward? And instead it was a lot of these like little games and management tactics that just wore you down after a bit.
Yeah, the whole thing from seeing what friends had said seemed very coercive. You know, I understand that there's a plan for that, but it seemed really insulting to not even allow that debate, which people know about in the public. You know, people know that there are these two factions within the Democratic Party due to Bernie Sanders running as a Democrat that already existed before that. But the attempt... Go for it.
I was just saying, like, he gave voice to what so many of us Democrats were feeling. And that we have a, you know, that there's the corporatist wing and there's the progressive wing of the party, and they want very different things. And when you have, you know, and I have friends who are on the platform committee, I know some of the stuff they proudly claimed from the stage, they actively fought against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all that did some of the same management tactics to wear people down there as well. And then they're claiming these very progressive, and it's the most progressive platform on the stage, but then made sure to deny the delegates who are there access to speak and to share and to discuss and to debate. And that was all we wanted, was to feel heard and to have these management techniques and to shut out our voices and then demand unity.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Yeah. Not even demand unity, just proclaim it. Like, yeah, it's already unity. Good job, everyone, for unifying. You know, it wasn't, yeah. I mean, from the outside, it just looked that way.
And it was so weird to, you know, to talk to family and friends who are watching the news coverage and to have them have no idea what it was actually like there on the ground. You know, because we were supposed to have... both campaigns are supposed to have their delegates and supposed to have their super volunteers whose job it is to make sure the delegates have food and water and everything else, because some of those lines are really long.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be present, you know, you need help, and or if you're disabled or whatever else. And we had hundreds of delegates or hundreds of volunteers who traveled there on their own dime who were stripped of their credentials and weren't even able to participate. And that was part of why we had to really fight for our seats, was because our I just would go many of those sessions, because if you tried to go to the bathroom, you could be locked out if a president was in transit, or someone could take your seat and you'd end up trying to fight to find a spot to sit back down. And so I just liked to eat or drink or have any food for the bulk of the time I was there on the floor. And that adds, when you add that to the sleep deprivation and the stress and all the tension that's going on, that's not exactly the best mind to be in for unity.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you say they had their credentials revoked, at what point did that happen?
Well, luckily in Washington State, we didn't have any credentials revoked. And we, you know, our state chair definitely made all of the efforts he could to be friendly and representative of both camps. And that's something I definitely appreciate and think other states should follow the example of. But for some, it was their credentials were revoked for as little as holding a TPP sign or the anti-TPP. And then it was the National Party that revoked the credentials for the volunteers who are supposed to be there just to be helpers. And, I mean, that was not a cheap trip. You know, I ended up spending... you know, close to $4,000, or the cost for the trip for me was almost $4,000 by the time you factor in, you know, lost wages and hotel and airfare and food and transportation and food. So this was not a vacation. And so many people took that time and everything off of work to be a part of the democratic process, only to be shut out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that doesn't signal that we're welcome.
Absolutely. And so we have about 3 minutes left. What else do you want people to know? And what would you just say to folks going forward?
Well, one of the biggest things is if you are a Clinton supporter listening to this, I can definitely understand your joy and stand with you in a historic nomination. I definitely see that. But for the Bernie Sanders supporter in your life, don't push unity right now. Let them focus on the down ballot. Let them sit with this, because this has been an incredibly hard year. And we need to be successful no matter what happens at the top of the ticket going forward. We need to have seats, get as many seats as we can elected in Congress and in the legislature and here in the state, and put that youthful energy that is so needle invited and vital, and put all that, these are the people who knocked on doors and broke records for their engagement. Let's leverage that in a spot where they're comfortable and feel comfortable working. And then we'll just see where we are come November. But I would ask that everyone stand with us in holding the DNC accountable and trying to make it the best party that we can, and to get more transparency and get rid of some of these election irregularities and the money that's in politics, because that's the way that we can really work together. And I'm hoping, and if any of you are considering running or getting involved into politics for the first time, this is the time to get in, and you're definitely wanted and needed, and to stay engaged. And we're starting to move things in a positive direction, and it's important not to back down now. So keep going at it, no matter where you find yourself, the Green Party, Democratic Party, Libertarian, whatever, wherever you're, where you are on that spectrum, but be engaged.
Great. And do you have any resources to point people to who maybe want to enter that process for the first time, or who want to know more about what actually happened at the DNC?
Oh, man. I should be trying to post some things soon. All my social media is at Hello Miss Lewis. So that's HelloMsLewis. Brand new Congress is going to be putting some stuff together and is engaging now. I know there's Bernie Sanders' Our Revolution that's going to be coming out, and I'll definitely make an effort to work. If anyone follows me on any of those social media, I'll, be it Twitter or Facebook or whatever else.
Great.
I'll get those links posted.
Great. And if you send those to me, I'll include them on the podcast notes here too. So.
Great. Thank you so much. It's
Perfect.
Been a pleasure. And I miss and love Spokane. I'm going to be back there next weekend, and I can't wait to see everybody and eat at my favorite places.
Cool. Sounds good to me. Thank you so much for your time, Jessa.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye. So if you're just joining us, that was Jessa Lewis, who was acting communications coordinator for the Washington State delegation at the Democratic National Convention this last week in Philadelphia, talking about her experience there. You're listening to Praxis. I'm going to take a quick break and get on the phone with my second guest of the hour, Sandy Williams, editor of the Black Lens News, who was also there and can tell us a little more about it. So thanks for listening. Don't go away. I'll be right back on with Sandy in just a minute. All right. You're on the air. Thank you for joining me. I just got off the phone with Jessa Lewis, who she was talking about what an exhausting, crazy week it was. So thanks for making time during your recuperation to talk to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Do you want to give a little background for people who aren't familiar with your work or you on what you were doing on a media level and a delegate level at the DNC this last week?
Okay. Well, I was elected to be a delegate for Bernie Sanders through the caucus process. So I was an elected delegate. And once I found out that I was going, then I decided since I published the, I'm in New York, so we have a helicopter flying over, right? Since I published the Black Lens newspaper, I decided that since I was going to be at the Democratic convention, I would see if I could also get media credentials. And so that when I wasn't performing my delegate duties, I could also be covering the convention as a journalist. So I applied for the credentials and I received those as well. So I had both. Truth is, I didn't have a whole lot of time because the requirements of being a delegate, I did not have a whole lot of time to do much with the media credentials, but my photographer, Bob Lloyd, also went, And he did an extensive job of covering the convention. So we're hoping to do have a photojournalism display in the September issue of the Black Lens.
Awesome. I look forward to it. And people can find that at blacklensnews.com, correct?
Correct.
Yes, I'm so glad I pulled that out right. So what, I guess so much happened. I'm having trouble even asking people where to start. What was your overall impression of the convention, and maybe what were things that surprised you about it?
I'm still processing, and I think most of us are still processing it. And so I had told that I was going to write reflections. I was going to do daily reflections, and then Monday hit, and I just didn't have the brain capacity to do that. So, what my reflections are going to be in a week may not be the same, but I can certainly tell you what I'm thinking about right now. I was really excited to go. I think that's the main thing for me. I was really, really excited to go, to have the opportunity to be at the convention, to have the opportunity to be a delegate for Bernie Sanders, to have an opportunity to fight for what I thought were some very important issues for this country right now. That's what got me excited. Prior to this, I had not been interested at all in participating in the political process, particularly not the national convention. So I was really excited to be there. And so I think what I discovered was that there really was no opportunity to be involved in anything. I sort of heard inklings of that, that it really wasn't about that, but it really is just about, sort of showcasing the candidate, and it's sort of a 4-day commercial, and I had heard inklings of that, but I think until I experienced it, I had no idea that, in fact, that's all it is a 4-day infomercial for the Democratic Party, and whoever the Democratic Party decides that their candidate is. So I was progressively, over as the days passed by, and we were hammered with this message that they were trying to get out, I was increasingly annoyed and by the end very angry at feeling fairly used by the whole process, and not having had an opportunity to have my voice heard at all, not having had an opportunity, I didn't feel like, to address any of the really important issues. Sort of feeling like we were just props for them. So that's what I learned. And I gave an interview with I don't even remember who it is at this point, when he asked me how I felt, and I said, I will never, ever do this again. And I asked him to emphasize the ever part. I will never, ever do this again. That's what I'm left with. What that means in terms of local politics, I don't know. But as far as national politics are concerned, I can't even imagine a situation that would get me to do that again. So that's kind of what I'm left with.
Wow. Yeah. And the props, that's a strong mental image, mm-hmm. I think, especially considering Jessa just told me about how after the walkouts on day two, I believe, mm-hmm. People were brought in from somewhere to fill those empty seats.
To fill our seats. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, the stuff, it's like once I think of the Wizard of Oz, like once you pull the curtain back and you see who the wizard really is, you can't unsee that. And there were things that we discovered about what that process is that I can't ever unknow again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was that there were people who were paid to fill our seats. So it was so incredibly important. The show of it all, the entertainment of it all, the illusion of it all, I guess that's the word I'm trying to find, the illusion of it all was so important that it was more important to have the illusion than the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I discovered. And so part of that was paying people to fill our seats. Part of that was having people block us. Part of that was dimming the lights so you couldn't see who was actually protesting. Part of that was, playing music whenever there was anything that even hinted at not agreement. They would just strike up the band. They would move the cameras closer and do close-ups. I mean, it was just fascinating to hear what people were seeing and not seeing in comparison to what was actually happening.
Yeah, and something I appreciated so much, you know, even though your reflections didn't go as planned, which I understand that 100%, being like, I'm going to do this ambitious thing, and then getting there and saying, no, I'm going to sleep a tiny bit and not have energy.
Yeah.
But you were there, Ava Sharifi, some other people who I follow on social media already were posting great updates from inside. And I think it really, it allows that curtain pullback, as you said, to happen in a much bigger scale. How do you think that's going to play out in the future with, and how do you think it will play out with the ultimate impact of the convention, where there's these two totally different stories that aren't connected to each other at all, but that are both documented?
Honestly, I don't know. I think another piece of what I'm sort of processing is that there's a large swath of the American public that doesn't really care. You know, and I think that's the truth. I mean, we were dismissed, we were belittled, we were told that we were just whining and sore losers, and you know, and so I don't know how big that percentage is, but I am disheartened that there's a very large percentage of people that have bought into the whole Trump-Clinton dichotomy thing, and they're so invested in that that the truth of what really happened doesn't really matter. And so as long as the attention can be focused on how bad the Republican Party is and how bad the Republican candidate is, that's really all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I would hope that as more and more truth comes out, that it would make a difference. But, you know, just watching the interaction between the Sanders delegates and the Clinton delegates, I'm not so sure that, at least in the short term, maybe in the long term, it'll make a difference. I'm not so sure in the short term that it'll make a difference.
Yeah. And I noticed that the first night, I watched the speeches the first night, and that was about all I could really take. Mm-hmm. And it was just when I was around somewhere where it was on. But I just noticed how much airtime it was, yet more free advertising for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Just in saying his name over and over again. I try to not say the name on the show. But the focus was so obvious when there could have been, it could have been this moment to host a meaningful debate between two factions of a party that
it could have been.
Many people find reasonable.
It could have been. And I think many of us, I won't speak for anybody else. I think for me in particular, I had some sort of naive belief that that really was what it was about. There were some platform issues that I think are really important ones that had not been resolved. I thought that part of the process was to address those and come to some sort of consensus. I mean, I thought that's what it was about. You know, if you really are wanting to bring people together and we're going to be stronger together and whatever that slogan was supposed to be, then I thought it was really about addressing the places where we don't feel like we're together and figuring out a way that we can come to consensus. But absolutely no intention of doing that ever in that convention. And that was made clear from the very first moment, I think, that we stepped foot in Philadelphia. You know, it was really clear that that was not going to happen. It certainly was very clear from the very first, from Monday morning. Really clear that that wasn't going to happen. It was really about a narrative that had been created by the Democratic Party, and that that narrative was going to play out come hell or high water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the 4 days were about.
Yeah. So by the time Jerry Springer showed up, you were well aware of that. That's what you're saying.
Oh, my gosh. No, I mean, really. Really? That, you know, that's who's going to be placed in front of me to tell me what I should do in a political process? I was just beside myself. And, you know, and it just went from there, you know, from Monday when Bernie was adamant that all the delegates should meet with him, and we were sort of trying to figure out what was going to happen in that moment. And that moment ended up being I won't say a request, but, well, I guess maybe it was a request that we support Hillary Clinton. And I think it went from that point forward, it was really clear that that's what it was about. really wasn't about us sort of fighting for the issues that we had all sort of invested our lives in over the past several months. It wasn't about that anymore. And so then it was just, you know, one speaker after another, both, you know, because we had morning speakers, we had breakfast meetings, and there were breakfast speakers, and there was convention speakers, and it was just like, can you beat people off the head with it any more than that, you know? And even when Bernie's name was put into nomination, the person who seconded the nomination seconded it by saying we should go for Hillary Clinton. I'm just like, really? Yeah.
That's not really
that's
what
how you second somebody's nomination for president. It was weird.
Well,
you
that,
know?
Yeah, isn't what the yeah, that's not what seconding something is.
No, it's not. So you just kind of go, okay, you know, I don't know. So
all right.
I escaped. So I think what many of us started doing, you know, after we walked out on Tuesday, you know, by Wednesday, many of us were trying to figure out, you know, if there was a way to find meaning in this. And you know, so I spent Wednesday walking around doing sort of ad hoc interviews with people, which was actually quite interesting. I did that. I went to a protest rally that was sponsored by Black Men for Bernie, who I was actually one of the people that I really wanted to meet. They've been traveling all around the country doing voter registration, and really wanted to meet them, and so I opted to go there. And so there were things that I just decided that I would rather do, and so a few of us did that. And that sort of made it bearable. That made it bearable for me. I went to an excellent workshop that addressed racism and the police, the relationship between the police and the community, which had Nina Turner and Benjamin Jealous, and I'm trying to think of their names. It was a phenomenal panel. I'll be putting that on in my reflections at some point. But that really lifted my spirit, because it was nice to know that in the midst of all this craziness, there were actually people that were speaking truth and were speaking about substantive issues, and so I think it was if I had not connected with those kind of things, I think it would be taking me much longer to sort of get my sanity back.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me think about this. I have a couple directions I want to go, but. How big, one thing that I didn't see, are there any coverage of it all? I saw some photos from you and some photos from some others. And I watched a little bit of a stream of a march that happened. I don't remember on which of the days that some people I know who are local in Philadelphia had organized. And what were the protests like outside? I know there was it was pretty tightly controlled in the area around the convention center.
Yeah. So around the convention center was very much tightly controlled. And once the convention started, I don't know what those protests were that were close to the convention, because we were inside, either inside or gone somewhere else. So those I can't speak to. My daughter and I went to the march that was held on Sunday before the convention started. It was huge. And that it started out huge, and then they marched for 4 miles and then ended up where I heard there were tens of thousands of people there. I didn't make it to that because we had something that we had to do Sunday evening. So I wasn't able to go all the way to the end. But there were tens of thousands of people there. So, and that was the first one. And then they held protest marches and rallies and block parties and stuff all week long. So there was something happening every day. There were multiple things happening every day. You know, I interact with people who drove from different places all across the country, from California, from Washington, from Colorado. I mean, there were people from all over the country that drove in just to be there to express their opposition to what was going on. And so thousands of people, you didn't hear about that. You know, I captured some of it, and there's some people that got video of that stuff that hopefully that will all be coming out. We're trying to sort of amass all this stuff in a place where people can see it all.
Mm-hmm.
But most of that wasn't covered at all. You know, and again, it was the narrative. The narrative is that everybody's happily sitting in the convention center waiting for the coronation to happen. That was the narrative. And anything that opposed that was squashed or quieted down as mm-hmm. much as possible. What I heard was the international media did a much better job of covering what was going on than the national media.
Yeah. Which not entirely surprising, but also disappointing. Like so many things during the entire week.
Yes. yes. Disappointing. That's a good word. Disappointing.
I don't know if I had enough belief going in to be ultimately disappointed. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's something else of just it's that resignation almost. But But what I wonder from you now, there's a couple different directions that people are going in terms of kind of, you know, hold the nose and go with the Clinton option to avoid Trump. And then slowly there's kind of a thought of like infiltrate the Democratic Party, slowly reform it. And then there's another option that's saying, let's form either around the Green Party infrastructure or something else. Let's form a new left party, really robust third party in the U.S. and start at the local level. Where are you at with all of that?
You know, I don't know where I'm at. Well, certainly I'm not voting for Trump. I never was. So that's not on the table. But I also sort of refuse the whole that it's an either or thing. So I'm not in that camp. You know, hold the nose and vote for Hillary Clinton because that's the only choice you have. I don't buy into that. I actually got into an argument with somebody on the street corner in Philadelphia because he was trying to say that that was my only other option, and I said that's the only other option. I don't buy that. I'm playing the game. That's a big game, I think, that's being hoisted upon people that's some choices you have. I don't believe that. And where I'm at is this. I think that particularly African-American people, so I'll speak for African-American people, have been lockstep with the Democratic Party for way too long. And I think because of that, the Democratic Party has sort of made the assumption that they can do whatever they want to do, however they want to do it, and we're still going to vote for them. I think that's wrong, and I think that's why they've gotten a bit arrogant with what they're doing now, where it doesn't seem to really matter much. You don't have to earn the vote anymore. It's just sort of assumed that that's what's going to happen. So that being the case, I'm not willing to give my vote away to somebody who has not earned it. And at this point, the Democratic Party has not earned it. So what happens between now and November, I don't know. Certainly if they're headed the direction that they're headed right now, I don't hold out any hope that they're even going to acknowledge that there's anything to earn, much less try to earn it. So I don't know what that leaves me with. I'm not sure. I did a lot of research and looking into Bernie Sanders before I stepped into supporting him. So before I would do the same with any other candidate, it would require that on my behalf would be to do the same due diligence with them that I did with Bernie. And I haven't had time to do that yet. So, you know, I don't know between now and November. My focus is rather on the local level. I don't have to be a Democrat to support candidates that I think are progressive. And I'm more in that ballpark now where mm-hmm. I would be looking at individual candidates, whether they be Democrat, Republican, Independent, or whatever other party, if I believe in what their position is, if I believe in what their history is, if I believe that they're doing things that I think are in the best interest of the people that I support, then I would vote for them. So I'm in that place. I'm also in alignment with, I did an interview with the founder of Black Men for Bernie, and he's doing a voter registration drive where he is attempting to register 20 million African-American voters, with the intention being to create a huge voting bloc that would be able to leverage the political process and do things that are in the best interest of the African-American community. And I really like that. I don't know if there's a way for me to get involved in what he's doing, but that would be something that I would be interested in. So that's kind of a long answer to your question. I don't know yet. I haven't come up for air enough yet to be able to make a clear decision.
Yeah.
But if I was ever to vote for a Democratic candidate, they have a hell of a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After this convention, that's all I have to say. You can't do to us what was done to us just in those 4 days, not to mention what was done to us before those 4 days happened, but you cannot do to us what was done to us during those 4 days and then expect me to sort of fall in line and say, I don't remember that that just happened to me. But I'm going to go ahead and support you anyway. That's not going to happen. So I'm not sure what it would take, because that's what people, that was sort of the million-dollar question that people kept, reporters kept asking us, what would it take? I'm not sure what it would take, but I am not a happy camper right now. So I think I need to think about that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really valid. And one of my hopes that I kind of assume, since I think that you do a lot of, you, I obviously know that you've done a lot of political work for a long time, in that you've done a lot of activist work and a lot of movement work and a lot of artistic work around communicating, you know, what values are and what different things would be possible outside of what's currently going on. And that's where my kind of bias leans me towards, is towards street level movement style activism. Do you see?
And I think, you know, I think there are inside the process people. So I don't have any qualms against people who say that their role is to infiltrate the Democratic Party and change it from the inside. I say more power to you. Go for it. Maybe if it was 20 years ago, I'd be one of those people. But I've been at this for 30 years, and I'm not interested in being one of those people anymore. So I think for me, it's really about doing, you know, continuing doing what I've been doing, which is trying to figure out a way to give voice to people who don't have a voice, to empower people, help people empower themselves, actually, to help them understand the truth, to pull the curtain behind, to pull the curtain away from what's really happening, so people can really see the truth. Because if you make a choice based on understanding all the truth, then I'm fine with that. But if you make a choice based on not having complete information, I'm not okay with that. And so my interest right now lies in making sure that people make informed choices and really understand what's actually going on. And then they can make whatever choices they want to make. And so I'm more about that right now than I am really caring much about political candidates. I'm sort of burnt out on that right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I saw a great short argument online about this, basically making your choice, your Clinton Trump choice, if that's your choice, based on who you'd rather organize against for the next 4 years. Who do you want to spend 4 years opposing?
Organizing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what else, just in these last few minutes that we have, would you like people to know, people to be thinking about as the primary deadline is tomorrow, or just resources for folks moving forward?
The primary deadline is tomorrow. With whatever time is left, if you haven't taken a look at the candidates, I would look at them and don't make an assumption that because somebody is a part of a particular party, that by default makes them something. One of the things that I shared with folks in Philadelphia is I come from a family historically of Democrats. We were historically Democrats, which is the case for, I would say, the majority of African American people. And so, if a candidate was a Democrat, they sort of got bonus points for that. I mean, I sort of made an assumption that it meant something in the past, something that I supported. That's gone for me. And so what I would say to people is that to not make an assumption that because somebody carries the big D or the big R, that by default means something, that I would encourage people to do a little bit more research than that. And that democracy takes time, and it takes putting energy into figuring out what's really going on and who's really addressed the policies and the positions that are in our best interest and not just giving lip service to it. So that's what I would leave people with. Do the work, do the work and pay attention to alternative forms of information, because the mainstream information has a narrative that they are projecting out there. And that's both a narrative, both for the the Republican side and the Democratic side. So there's a narrative that's being pushed forward, and I would encourage people to look behind the narrative because the truth is there. The truth is not in this story that's being blasted around to serve whatever the purpose is that it's serving.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And do send me, I mean, I think I'm really looking forward to that September issue of the Black Lens to see all Bob's photos. I was so excited when I saw that Bob was going with you online when I saw your pictures, because I knew you could, you know, divide and conquer the whole convention.
I'm really grateful to him. And I actually didn't see him very much. So I'm really looking for, I haven't seen the photos. I'm looking forward to seeing what he captured. And grateful that he took the time. Don't know what I would have done if he'd not been there. So I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. And I was also really glad to see your sign in at least a couple crowd shots that were tracked down and shared.
And I have to give credit to a woman by the name of Barbara, because she was in the ADA section, and she was sitting in a wheelchair. And in order for me to be in a position where I could be seen, I had to stand in front of her. So I asked her for permission because I would have been blocking her. And she said that she felt that it was more important for my sign to be seen than for her to be able to see. So I'm really grateful that she did that. And because she did that, I was able to get my sign out there. And that, so it was moments like that. There was moments like that that made it survivable because people really cared and people's hearts were really there. And because of those moments, you know, I at some point, someday, I'll be able to reflect on those.
Mm-hmm. You're just not ready yet.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the record, that sign was from the video that you animated yourself, the and read Old Black Lesbians Feel the Burn, too.
Oh, that's right. Old Black Lesbians Feel the Burn, too. I wanted to get that up there and actually snuck it in, which is because part of the control mechanism of the convention was that, you know, you were not supposed to bring in unapproved signs, and that certainly was not an approved sign. So I snuck it in and waited until the appropriate moment to pull it out. So I was happy that I was able to get that scene.
Yeah. It busts the whole Bernie Bros narrative. You are the opposite of a Bernie Bro by every metric.
Absolutely.
So, well, Sandy, thank you so much for making time during your recuperation to talk with me.
Thank you.
And
it was fun talking to you.
Yeah, and we'll share out all the rest of those stories as they come out. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
And if you're just joining us at the end of the hour here, you've been listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I was just talking with Sandy Williams, editor of the Black Lens News, which you can find at blacklensnews.com. Before that, I was talking with Jessa Lewis, who was the communications coordinator for the Washington State Delegates at the Democratic National Convention. If you missed any part of the show today, you can find it both at facebook.com at facebook.com/praxisradio. You can find the podcast at soundcloud.com/praxisradio. That's PRAXISRADIO. And you can email me with any questions or anything else like that at Praxis, PRAXIS at KYRS.org. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Monday. I'll be back next week. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.